This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Hello, welcome to Startup to Success with Maria. My guest today is the founding director and executive chief board certified professional coach, Jacqueline Keller. Jacqueline, I am so thrilled to have you on my show today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, I have so many questions today.
Let's jump in.
When I saw the book that you wrote, Body After Baby, I was like, oh my God, all I want to talk about is the book. But before we jump into that, and the reason why I want to talk about that is because I'm going through that as we speak. I gave birth 4 months ago, so my body is just not going back to the old body as fast as it should or would have if I was in my 20s. But before we talk about that, I'd like to learn more about you and what inspired you to start your amazing career and also NutriFit Online. I mean, it's just amazing what you've accomplished. So please tell me what inspired you to get started.
Well, the inspiration is simple because passion is health, and it derives from the loss of my father, who died when I was a teenager very suddenly. So, you know, I think when something like that affects you personally and sort of rocks your world, it affects you in ways you don't realize at the time. And I certainly didn't realize it at the time. I mean, I was on one trajectory, you know, to do other things with my life, and then all of a sudden, you know, everything got turned upside down. And my father, who I was very close to, just, you know, never came home from vacation one day. And that was it. He was gone. So it took about 10 years for me to sort of realize that the corporate world, as successful as I was in it, was really not where my passion lied. And I pivoted when I was able to do so, because I didn't have dad, I didn't have kids. I was for a very short time between marriages, and I thought, well, you know, this is the time to just stop everything and start doing what I really love to do, which was helping people. And so that's how NutriFit was born, literally with one client that asked for help. And, you know, it's been 34 years. I can't believe it. It just flies by. But, you know, when you're a passion or mission driven business, it does fly by. I mean, it's literally what you love to do. So find yourself doing it more and more and the days go.
So tell me a little bit about your, I guess, well, I want to learn a little bit about Le Cordon Bleu in Paris.
You
went there, and was that the corporate experience that you've had after that?
No. I actually went to chef school in France when I was 16. I had this idea that I was going to become a great chef. And of course, my parents were mortified. It was like, really? That's what you want to do? Because that's not, you know, the orientation that they came from. And, but again, my dad, who was very supportive of pursuing your passion and sort of establishing yourself, said, okay, well, if you really want to go, you know, we'll play for the plane ticket, but you have to earn the money for all the rest. And I was 16 years old. So, I mean, it took a part-time job and a lot of effort, but I made enough money to get myself enrolled at Cordon Bleu. And I went off to Paris, not knowing a soul, barely speaking the language. And of course, school is taught in French. And I thought, well, this is it, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And truth be told, I didn't stay for the whole program because I thought, no, you know what, maybe I should really just go back and go to college instead. So I sort of put my passion for food on the back burner, came back home and finished a college degree in business and started my kind of corporate thing at like 19 in in business. And I spent about 9 years in the corporate world, but always dabbling. I always had my hands in food, and I had a little catering business on the side, and I had this on the side, and I had that on the side. And finally, I just, you know, abandoned all the other things and ran against everybody's advice into a food business. So one of those things where you look back on it, you say, that was kind of nutty. Why did you do that? But I guess you do it, you know, what fuels your passion.
I love that. And I think it takes a lot of chutzpah to not listen to, you know, sometimes even family might be the, you know, family could be the people that are telling you not to do it. You're crazy to do it. And it takes a lot to not listen to people and just listen to your inner voice and pursue what you believe is the calling. How did you, was it in line with the why? Like, did you ever question, like, why am I here? What's my purpose? And what, obviously food was your passion, but how did you align being an entrepreneurial with your passion? And
Well, that part was easy because I've always been entrepreneurial. My father was an entrepreneur from early years. In my little tiny high school, I started a student store. I had a little catering business on the side when I was, you know, 18 years old. I mean, I just, I think when you grow up in an entrepreneurial family, it's something that you're comfortable with. You're comfortable with not having that secure paycheck. And quite honestly, I'm a really heart-led person. And if I would have used the head, I probably would never have done what I've done. Yeah. Because the head would say, you have a really great job, you have a lot of security, you have a paycheck every week, you have an office, you know, you have an assistant, you have all these trappings that for a young person were like, wow, mm-hmm. somebody's paying me to do all this stuff. And then I'm not always listening to my head. I'm much more often running after my heart, and I'm still doing it because I'm still creating new things. So I think that given the fact that I wasn't afraid to be an entrepreneur, I never felt like, you know, I'm going to end up on the street if I don't have a paycheck. I've always known that I would find a way to make money no matter what I had to do to get it. And I'm not afraid of, I don't have financial insecurity that way. I just, maybe I don't think about it enough.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just, you know.
I'm like that too. I just don't think about it. Yeah, I just know I'm going to find a way to make money. It right. doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to starve. You know, you're not going to starve. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't occur to you that you're abandoning something because you don't feel like you need it, I guess.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty inspiring. For the listeners out there who have ideas but are hesitant, they have great jobs or maybe they don't have a job and they need to support the family right away and make money, what's your advice to them on how to take the leap and start whatever it is that they've been thinking about starting for so long?
Good question. I mean, I think quitting and a good job, if you have responsibilities for other people, and there's issues where you have to be financially secure, you know, you can't be unmindful of that. There are resources for getting loans. There are resources for startups, for small businesses. In fact, there's a lot of resources, more so now than when I was doing this. So if it's a financial boost that you need in order to begin something that really sparks your interest, I believe that you can use the internet to find those resources, use the Small Business Administration to find those resources, talk to friends and colleagues who are independent and operating independent businesses, find out, you know, what resources they have. But I think taking it apart in baby steps is a much better idea than, you know, leaping off the cliff. You know, there are a lot of interim steps that you can take to build your idea to the point where it is something you can actually do. short of doing everything. Start with an outline. Start with a clear, distilled statement of what it is you want to do.
Yeah.
I think vetting that against people whose judgment you trust, making sure that you're not coming up with a solution for a problem that doesn't exist.
Right.
Those are kinds of key things to fleshing out whether or not the idea that you have is really going to sustain a business, because some things are just great ideas, but they're not businesses. So you have to define what the service or product is that you want to provide and assess whether or not there's truly a market for it. And it doesn't take a big focus group or an elaborate market study, but it does take a clear statement of what it is that you want to do. And then understanding how many other people there are doing it. Why is there no one else doing what it is that you want to do? Maybe you're just so far out in front that you're ahead of the curve. And maybe it is because it's really a solution for which a problem doesn't exist. Yeah. So I think taking a few of those interim steps to actually getting a business license is a good idea.
Yeah.
But once you have those steps down, the mechanics of how to get a business license, and there are a lot of resources online for how to begin. But I think taking the time to vet the idea is a good idea.
Yeah. And you know, it wasn't until a few years ago that I learned about score.org, which is a nonprofit available nationwide where you can reach out to mentors from different industries. These are people that have retired. A lot of them are retired, either entrepreneurs or executives of Fortune 500 companies. And they have a lot of experience. They can guide you if you're stuck with something. But again, like you said, you know, research and see if it exists. And if it doesn't exist, try to see why. Maybe, like you said, the problem isn't big enough. So for you to assume based on your thoughts and needs it's not sustainable. It needs to be a big enough, well, not big enough problem. You can always focus on certain niches, but it needs to be something that's a problem for others as well, if you're trying to solve it and make money.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, but don't abandon the passion either, because some things are worth doing as hobbies. They don't have to be businesses. Not everything that you believe in has to be the way you make your living.
Yeah.
You know, like there are a lot of hours in the day. And one thing you discover when you're an entrepreneur is that, or a passionate person, I should say, is that not every passion you pursue is going to be a business that you do. You don't have to turn everything into a business. Some things can just be things you do in your off hours, things you're passionate about, things you believe in, things you fulfill you in that way. So if it's not a business, maybe it's a passion and a hobby, and maybe you can parlay it from that to something else, or maybe that will suggest something else to you. But you don't need to abandon every idea just because it isn't a business. There's other ways to enjoy those ideas and to see them to fruition.
Jackie, that's such a great advice. And I'm going to give you my experience with not just the podcast, but these free tutorials and webinars that I started doing when the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So I own a marketing agency that helps tech startups that get funded millions of dollars and they need to scale really quickly and acquire customers. And small businesses generally can't afford our services because we do city takeover campaigns, which entails, you know, podcast advertising, influencer marketing, radio, TV. I mean, it encompasses a lot. So the budgets are really high. And so because of the pandemic, I decided to start teaching some of these things that my agency internally, my team, we do for these startups.
Great.
And I thought, you know, some things can be so simplified that anybody can really, if they follow my directions, they can do it. They should do influencer marketing in-house. They should do, you know, certain things in-house so that it can be profitable. Mm-hmm. And so I always loved teaching, but I didn't really pursue teaching because they don't really make much money. And I just like making money.
Right.
And so to your point, you don't have to, not every passion needs to lead to money. And I realized that I feel so amazing when I do these webinars. It's my way to teach, to really do what I love, but I'm not relying on it financially, because if I do, I know I won't survive.
Right. And yeah. So I think that's a very good point and a great example of how you take something that you're good at, that you've always wanted to do, and allow yourself to do it in a way that makes sense. And it actually, one hand washes the other in terms of your business, because I'm sure there are people who sign up for your educational events who eventually will, you know, potentially become customers of the other, or
just followers for the podcast show and the radio
exactly.
show, you know,
exactly.
which my intention is to build a community and inspire them, but also give them actionable advice that they could take and make something happen, you know, not just
That's
get
great.
Inspired, but wow. Oh my God. You are such an inspiration. I want to talk about NutriFit a little bit more.
Okay.
How the beginning stages were, what were some of the challenges as well as the opportunities that you came across as you were building?
Well, you know, the challenges in the food business are enormous. I mean, the first challenge is always a geographic one. Like where do you cook? Now in Los Angeles, at least you can start these kinds of cottage businesses in your home. But when we started, that wasn't permitted. You had to have a health department licensed facility. So we partnered with a existing catering company, and we essentially bought time in their kitchen, which logistically was challenging because first of all, you had to kind of take everything there and find space for your stuff that wasn't co-mingled with their stuff, and, you know, share refrigeration and share sinks and share stoves. And, you know, what I found very quickly was that that wasn't great because, you know, their operation was had different standards than mine. Let's just say, you know, I mean, my business is health. So obviously sanitation and all of those issues are of paramount importance to me and how our business works. And as congenial as it was, as easy as it was from that standpoint, there wasn't any friction there. But I did find that it was disconcerting to have my standards not enforceable in a facility that wasn't mine. Mm-hmm. However, it was transitional for us. It was taking it from one client where I cooked in her home for her, with her, teaching her how to cook. And that's really how it started, with one client who said, I know you've been to culinary school. I know you have a background. Can you help me? My cholesterol's too high. The doctor said, I've got to do something or he's going to put me on pills. Can you help me? Wow. And I said, sure, you know, I mean, why not? Right. And so I went to her house and we cooked in her home and I showed her how to cook. And, you know, we talked about portions and we talked about menus and which foods lower cholesterol and so on and so forth. And she had such great results. You know, it really literally started from her as my one client to 5 clients, to 10 clients, to 20 clients. But, you know, obviously we needed to move from a shared facility into our own facility. So that was the big hit financially, was to find that first facility where there was enough structure in place where it wasn't a huge investment. We literally took over a sublease of a business that had outgrown a small facility and they had moved to a larger facility and they needed somebody to finish out their lease. Mm. And it was through a personal contact that I heard about this place, and it just met all the right criteria. It was small, it was affordable, it was rent. You know, I didn't have to build out hoods and stainless steel and equipment so much as I had to just be able to afford the rent. And at that point, I was teaching a lot of nutrition education and a lot of culinary education classes. And I had an income stream from that, which funded the rent for the personal catering service.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.